counted among the outlaws, he said, "Come, follow me." People from all walks of life since have been becoming outlaws.
There's one thing in life we all have. It's change. A lot of change is good. It's change we wanted to do. We planned on it. We could have planned for years for it, and we make changes in life. But there's another kind of change, is an unexpected change. A change we didn't want, we didn't expect. And that's also a part of life. And that one is hard to handle sometimes. Well, most of the time. Years ago, I just Googled it earlier. I can't believe it's still out there and being used, but there's in the business world, when things change, like, you know, structure change in a company or whatnot. Years ago, I came from the broadcast industry, and there was just always format change. Well, format change means they went from like country to classical or something like that. And that just means everybody lost their job almost. And, but how do you handle that? And they had, and it's still out there, but this business model called Who Moved My Cheese? So you may or may not have heard of that before, but that's a term I've always remembered. Who Moved My Cheese? And the idea was, it's this cartoon, if I remember it right. Basically, these mice, you know, and they know how to get to their cheese every day. They know how to go through the maze and get to the cheese, left, right, left, right, left, 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 right, whatever, they find the cheese. Well, one day the cheese is gone. Somebody moved their cheese. And one handles it well, one doesn't. So one of the mice, he's paralyzed. He doesn't know what to do. So, you know, you got to move on. You got to not overthink it and go look for new cheese. There's, you know, and frankly, it's not bad scenario, this move my cheese, but it's a little insulting. I mean, it's like, if you've lost the love of your life walks out, you're in the middle of your career, near the end of your career, and it ends. And you're without a job, or you're alone. Everything you thought was stable gets pulled out from underneath you. I really feel a little insulted to think about these two mice or whatever and this cartoon cheese. It's a little light. So I appreciate we have on here an adult today talking about this adult conversation. How do you handle change in your life? And it's Kurt A. David. We're going to bring him on, but we're also, I'm going to watch with you a little video from his website. Right here.
Class athletes, back to normal everyday life can be daunting. As a professional athlete myself, I know firsthand the struggles to find passion and purpose again when those glory days are over. But it's not just high caliber athletes who face change. Companies, large and small, risk losing momentum, having unfocused employees, and may ultimately experience the frustration of watching your company's core purpose become compromised. I've been fortunate enough to speak to hundreds of companies and share the personal stories of former professional athletes that often go untold. My goal with every speaking opportunity is to leave the audience inspired and hopeful and share the five commonalities of success that will help you thrive during change. Allow me the opportunity to serve your team by sharing stories and principles on how to create positive leadership and resolve conflict while building a better team ready for change. With every invitation to speak, I'm happy to discuss your specific situation and how my life, my stories, and my work with highly successful individuals and companies can help
your
team.
You can't handle me. I've had
too much
change.
Let's start the conversation by sending an email to kurt@kurtdavid.com. Your company does not have to face change alone. Allow me to help you face change like a champion.
Here he comes. Hello, Kurt.
Hey, Ken. How are you?
Very good. I don't know if you've ever thought of this, but for your career, as it progresses, and maybe a decade or two down the road, that face change like a champion. You could be a Depends undergarment spokesperson.
Lots of change going on. We could go from birth to death, basically, with change, right? I mean, that's the neat thing about change. It literally is from birth to death. And so, and along that whole journey, I couldn't help but notice that you mentioned about Who Moved My Cheese, one of my favorite books, right? Spencer Johnson, Dr. Spencer Johnson, forward by Ken Blanchard, you know, the author of The 1 Minute Manager. Great reads. If you haven't read that, definitely Move My Cheese is a great book. Simple yet effective.
I might have been too harsh about it. It does have good principles in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great lesson. Good principles is right.
All right. So briefly, what's your story? I'm assuming you talk about being a professional athlete, and I know the answers to these. You're like 8'9", and you weren't a professional limbo person.
Yeah, 4 foot and 33 inches actually is what it was. For those of you that got an A in math, if you got a C in math, I'm 5 foot and 21 inches. If you adhere to the metric system, I'm 2 meters, 6 centimeters. And if you failed math, I'm 6 foot 9. So I grew up, there was a family of 8 with 1 bathroom. So you learn early on that life isn't all about you. But all 6 of us kids were on athletic scholarship, and 2 of us played professionally. So imagine that. I mean, I can't imagine how my parents clothed and fed us that whole time. But we had a lot of success in sports, very competitive. And that was my foundation, right? That's how I was raised. And that was the foundation of, for the rest of my life.
And you played basketball for who?
Played college at Saginaw Valley State and played overseas in Europe in the European League.
Okay. And that's the genesis of your message now, right? Something happened there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they say, every professional athlete at some point loses their job, right? It's an undeniable fact. And mine was at a time that I didn't expect, right? It's one of the things about pro sports is you expect to play forever for as much money as you can. And unfortunately, that's not the reality, right? 100% of professional athletes ultimately lose their job. And then I discovered through my journey that the exit stats are pretty sobering. And if you want, I can share those exit stats, yeah. Ken. 25% of NFL players are broke within the first year out. Wow. 78% of NFL players within 2 years are broke. 60% of NBA players are bankrupt within 5 years, and there's an 80% divorce rate. So from job loss to disaster, that's reality for pro sports and pro athletes. And so, you know, as I went through my journey, one of the things I thought was, boy, wouldn't it be neat to sit down with other former professional athletes and hear about how they recreated their success, right? Because you hear about those crash and burn stories, right? But how do we sit down and find out people that have created success? And there's been plenty of those, you know, and that was been a neat thing that I came up with my idea for the book, to sit down with other former athletes. And so I sat down, being here in Detroit, sat down with 20 former Detroit Pistons, Tigers, Red Wings, and Lions, and heard their story, not just about their glory days, but about that transition out of sports, and more importantly, how they recreated their success after sports.
I kind of get the 80% divorce rate, because if that follows, I mean, this is stereotypical, maybe on the average, but they probably attract women that were attracted to them as celebrities, millionaires. And then when they're former celebrities and former millionaires, and they're broke, I can see that possibly, you know, reason for losing a lot of the personal relationships. But what is this broke thing when you have tens of millions in the bank?
No, and I want to address that as well, because, you know, certainly there are people out there that are cheating on their wives or having extramarital affairs perhaps. But think about this. I don't care how much money you make. If you are accustomed to being on the road 6 months out of the year, and all of a sudden you're toe-to-toe with your spouse every single day with a 95% pay cut, what relationship's going to survive that, right? That's the reality. And so, yeah, you know, you go from this legendary status and you're the guy, you're the girl, you know, in female sports, but all of a sudden now it's like, wait a minute, what happened here? Now I'm not the guy, the phone's quiet, right? That's one of the biggest concerns I hear is, hey, nobody's calling me anymore, right? It's not the same. And so, you know, funny thing is, a lot of the guys say, why is it when I'm making all this money that I get free cars, free dinners, free suits, but all of a sudden I stop making all this money and I got to pay for everything. And so that's one of the inside jokes as well. But back to your question about the broke, you know, a lot of these people, when they get into pro sports, it's sudden wealth. And it's the same thing with these lottery winners. You hear about these stories where they suddenly have wealth, and a lot of them don't have the financial literacy to support it, right? They come from different upbringing. That money, you know, handling money isn't always the first priority in learning how to do that. I know in Major League Baseball, they're trying to do something to help with that. In fact, when you sign a Major League Baseball contract these days, you have to have a financial advisor on your hip when you're signing that contract. However, the problem is advice is only as good as it is heeded. So it's still your money as an athlete. And so if you're, you know, want to buy a car, want to buy a Rolex, want to buy, you know, houses, whatever, it's still your money to make that decision. And so a lot of it's decision making. Ken, to your question, though, I think, you know, I use example Mike Tyson. You know, Mike was a ferocious, unbelievable boxer, right? Made $300 million during his career. Think about that for a second. He made $300 million during his boxing career. I mean, that's more than some country's gross domestic product, and lost it. It was all gone. And part of it for Tyson was that, you know, he had people robbing him blind, right? His people were taking advantage of him. But also he was making decisions. You know, did he really need all those white tigers and other decisions he made? So it's a combination. You know, some of it's some of our own fault. Some of it's just from people that were, looking to take advantage of athletes as a result.
Yeah. Would you say some of that 20% of relationships that do work, do they fall under kind of like the Hollywood ones where they have these lifelong partners? It seems like typically those rare circumstances are when they had somebody before they were famous, when mm-hmm. When they were scrounging to pay rent and they built a real love and then they became famous and wealthy. And it really doesn't matter if they lose that later or not, because it was built on caring for each other, not built on this,
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Ken, that a lot of them have that foundation before they got to that status. I mean, a lot of them were, you know, even in junior high, they know as an athlete, you know, hey, boy, you're ahead of the curve here, right? Unless you're Michael Jordan getting cut your freshman year in high school, most of them by junior high, definitely by high school, know that, hey, boy, this person's on a path, right? They know the path they're on because they are outliers in sports. But even then, you know, yeah, those relationships that are grounded, And I'll give you a great example. Frank Tanana is a good friend of mine. Frank played 21 years in Major League Baseball.
Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, Detroit Tigers, different teams throughout his career. 21 years, that's a long time to play wow. Major League Baseball. But, you know, been married for many, many years. And I think one of the things that helped him be grounded was that he realized that baseball was just what he did. It's not who he was, right? And so having that attitude, having that thinking, and it's the same way in relationship, right? Hey, you know, baseball is just what I do. It's not who I am. I'm a father, I'm a husband, that's probably one of the biggest challenges, I think. The athletes that have the biggest struggle with this transition after sports, that sport is their identity, and that's the problem, because when that is gone, and it will be gone, when that sport is taken away, they lost their identity as well. I had a little bit of that, you know, not a tremendous amount, but I had a little bit of that as well. But, you know, we have to understand that the sport is just what we do, it's not who we are. We have to figure out who we are, hopefully before playing that sport, but if not, certainly before we're done.
Yeah, and Frank Tanana came to faith through the Tigers chaplain, Jeff Totten, at some point years ago. But do you ever hear from some of these guys stories that have landed on their feet or recovered, that they have found some kind of faith that gave them structure to live by, where they're just not themselves, fame in a checkbook?
Yeah, we all need we all need that higher understanding and purpose in our life, right? We all do. My opinion is that we all have a God-shaped void in our life, and we find things that we try to fill it with, right? Whether it be alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever it is, you know, we try to fill that void, but it's a God-shaped void. And until we find that grounding, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be challenging for us to really fill it appropriately. And Frank, you know, I know Frank's stories, but you know, I interviewed him for my book, I interviewed him on the TV show. I've done 50 TV interviews with different athletes, and Frank was one of them I interviewed, and he talked very openly. He says, you know, the first 10 years of my baseball career, I wasn't the guy that I am today, right? I was the guy that was a non-Christian. And as a result, you mentioned about Jeff Totten being a chaplain with the Tigers. He's the one that connected. And Frank, as a result of some very difficult times, losing a very close friend, got injured and wasn't sure what his career was going to do. It really was at a moment of, I don't want to despair, it wasn't despair, but certainly a moment of questioning life and questioning things, that he came to Christ. And as a result, you know, he Frank Tanana claims himself, hey, I'm a Jesus freak, right? I'm out there just preaching and helping people and trying to tell them my story.
Right. So back to your story, you're playing basketball, and you injure yourself, and to the point where you're not going to be able to do this as a profession. And so you didn't have a plan B, right? You didn't have your business degree or a dad's company to walk into. You were just a basketball player that can't play basketball.
Well, fortunately for me, you know, I knew there was something wrong, right? I knew there. I could tell right away. I'm like, oh boy, this is not going to end well. I was over in Europe playing, hyperextended my knee. I knew I damaged it right away. I did come back because I did have a free agents tryout out in San Francisco. It was 18 of us by invite only. So there were scouts from all over the country and coaches that came for that tryout. It was the toughest 3 days of basketball I've ever had. But I knew something was off. And 2 weeks after that tryout, I went in for knee surgery and found out it was time to get a real job. Basically, the orthopedic surgeon had said, hey, yeah, you know, you can keep playing and not walk by the time you're 40, or you can give it up, right? And so that was the sobering aspect for me. But I think that probably the most difficult part was realizing that here I was, you know, prime of my life as far as an athlete, and it was over, absolutely over. And I remember being angry, having all sorts of feelings. Probably the biggest part of my transition, Ken, that was very difficult, was that as an athlete, we're in competition with every soul around us. And what I mean by that is that even our own teammates, right? We're competing for playing time. We're competing for, you know, performance, and not just our competition and people we play against. And it took me about 5 years to really relax, to realize, you know what? I'm not in fierce competition with every soul around me, right? Is there competition in work and business? Absolutely. So one of the fortunate things that I had, though, was I made a commitment to finish my degree before I left to play over in Europe. And so I finished my degree before leaving for Europe. So I had a elementary education degree that I completed before I went over. So when I got done, I actually started teaching and coaching. I became a varsity coach, and that was part of my transition. But I also, I took a year off.
Were you teaching elementary school?
I was teaching middle school and some elementary classes, yeah. But I was a varsity.
I couldn't imagine being an elementary school student with a teacher that's 6'9".
Yeah, no, I didn't do that young. That was too young for me. I would have hurt my back, right, doing kindergarten kids. But, you know, I took a year off before I started that. And part of what I did during that year was working on a master's in counseling. So I didn't teach very long. I actually got right into counseling. I became a middle school counselor. And that's what I did for over 25 years. And so I was a middle school counselor in various school districts, coaching basketball. But during that time is when I came up with the idea for the book and the TV show. And so that was a very interesting transition, because I went from helping kids, helping families, to helping athletes and helping people with their transition.
But you come up with 5 rules of success.
Yeah, no, great question, Ken. I discovered through my research from working with professional athletes and actually other companies as well that were going through transition, that I saw a commonality of success. In other words, what I saw, there was 5 things that every athlete and a lot of the companies were doing as they go through transition. And so being the simple mind that I am, I thought, boy, I got to create an acronym, right? I need to create an acronym. And that acronym is RULES, R-U-L-E-S. Each letter stands for something. Each letter means something. And that's why it helped me remember when working with athletes, working with companies. And so I call them my 5 rules of success, or 5 rules of change. That I use to this day to help people go through that transition.
And you're willing to share the secret with us?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's not a secret. It's out there. And, you know, we're doing so many other things now as far as, you know, with the TV show and leading change and communicating change. So basically, the 5 rules of change are this. Each letter stands for something. The first letter is R, which stands for refocus. What I've discovered is that any athlete, professional athlete, or anybody going through a change for that matter, has to have a refocus. And what that means is that taking a good look at your current goals and reevaluating and refocusing to new goals. And we could dive very, very deep into this. In fact, I do with workshops. Sometimes I'll dive deeper in with people or organizations to really look at what this refocus looks like. But one of the things I found is that we all need passion and purpose in our life. And one of the best ways to do that is to find a new passion, to find a new purpose, to find a new goal and objective. You know, it was so easy as an athlete, Ken, to set goals and look to accomplish those goals. I remember in the prime of my playing days, I'd have a sheet on my bedroom wall that I would see every day as I left my bedroom that had a morning workout. It would have the afternoon workout. It'd have the evening workout. I mean, I was working out 3 times a day, and it was easy to have those goals, you know, 3-month goals, 6-month goals, 12-month goals. And that was very easy as an athlete to do. But all of a sudden then, when I was done being an athlete, it's like, wow, what do I want? And how do I, you know, what are my goals? And it takes a while. And so that's why the refocus is very, very important for individuals as well as companies. And again, we can go very deep in this, but that's the crib note version of it. So the R stands for refocus. The next letter stands for use network. In other words, use your network. We all have a network of people around us. And, you know, especially athletes, right? We have too big of a network sometimes of people around us. But using that network. And what I mean by that is once you have your refocus, you have a clarity of where you want to be. It's just a matter of tapping into that network to say, boy, who in my network can I tap into to help me accomplish this goal? Now, something I always have to qualify and say is I'm not talking about using and abusing people, right? You create a win-win. In other words, if I have a refocus and, you know, I'll give you a great example. One of the guys that I worked with, he was an Olympic gymnast, right? He won a bronze medal at the Olympics and he wanted to transition out. And so when he finally did decide to transition out, one of his networks that he tapped into was in Hollywood. And he started doing Cirque du Soleil because he was a gymnast. So he worked for Cirque du Soleil for a while. Then he got into stunt acting. And through his network and connections was able to get into that. And it was kind of neat to see because he had this new focus and then he started using that network. I had a former Red Wing that used his network to talk about how he's no longer being a professional hockey player. He's a financial advisor. So by tapping into his network, he accelerated his business that much quicker as a result. So the U stands for using your network. Very important aspect and understanding the power of that, right? All of us have powerful networks that we can tap into once we have clarity of what that refocus is.
You know, this podcast here, really, well, when I started it, I put up a web page for it and basically said, not doing this to be internet famous for really no other reason than I've lived an interesting life. I met a lot of interesting people. And it all started out with me reaching into my network and just grabbing those people and sharing old stories that other people might find interesting or entertaining. And it's kind of grown since that.
Yeah. And you had to refocus because you knew exactly what you wanted to do once you did reach out to those people, right? You weren't just reaching out to them aimlessly without an idea what you wanted to do, but you had an idea. So a great example. Absolutely. So the RUL, the next letter, bar none, without question, without argument, is the most difficult for professional athletes. And that's letting go. Letting go. Because, you know, as professional athletes, it's in the marrow of our bones to never give up, right? Fall down 7, get up 8. In fact, we've seen that with athletes throughout the decades, throughout the years, that athletes didn't let go probably when they should have, right? They come back and keep hanging on and... And so it's very difficult because, you know, letting go is one of the most difficult aspects for an athlete. But actually, I've found that it's very difficult in life as well. And here's why. We have something that's called our familiar zone, right? It's a zone that we live in, that we are very comfortable with. It's a comfort zone. But I've also discovered when it comes to change that we have to leave that comfort zone to reach the growth zone. In other words, it's very, very difficult, if not even impossible, to remain in a comfort zone and have a growth zone. So we have to leave that area of growth, or I'm sorry, that area of comfort, that area of familiarity, which means letting go. Now, letting go could come in a couple different ways. It could be letting go of bad things, bad thoughts, bad way of thinking, bad practices. It could also be letting go of victories, championships, things that we've accomplished, right? A great example of that is I'm a history buff. I love history. And I studied the Roman Empire. And if you look at the Roman Empire, one of the things that you'll learn in the Roman Empire is that these generals, when they came home from conquering lands, had these major parades in Rome, right? It's kind of like a Super Bowl parade. In other words, let's say a general came home from conquering Alexandria as an example. So they come home from conquering Alexandria. They have these big parades. They call them campaigns. If you look in history, they're called campaign during the Roman Empire. And during this campaign, they're in the streets of Rome getting all these accolades. It's such a big deal. Their families in a chariot following them. But you can read this in history. As this general is getting all this attention and all these accolades, they have somebody in his chariot chirping his ear during that time saying, "All glory is fleeting. All glory is fleeting." In other words, great, you accomplished that. So what? What's next? And that can be part of letting go as well. So sometimes we have to let go of the bad things, bad thinking, but also let go of the championships and the victories as well in order to move forward.
I love that story about the Romans. And it's really, I mean, it makes sense, but it's kind of surprising. I mean, they're just so full of kind of like arrogance in their culture, but then to have a level that they don't pass up, you know, like you can't, you're not a god.
Well, you know, if you look at pro athletes, we're considered, you know, and I don't mean this in a literal sense, but we're considered like gods in a sport, right? It's like, wow, you're a pro athlete. And so as a result, you know, letting go of that is very important, right? A great example of that is this gymnast that I mentioned that was Olympic gold, bronze medalist. He and I were chatting for a long time, probably about 6 months before he finally let go. He couldn't decide. He's like, boy, do I want to continue and commit another 4 years of my life? Do I not? So we were going back and forth, working through this rules process, but we couldn't get past letting go. In contrast to that, I had a former Detroit Tiger that the agent called me and said, hey, listen, can you sit down with my player? He just got released in spring training. So I sat down with him. We started working through this rules process, RUL, got to the letting go, and we started talking about this. Within a week, I mean, he literally had let it go. He's like, yeah, I'm done being a pro athlete. I'm ready to move on with my life. And so everybody's different with their letting go process, right? It's kind of like grieving, right? Everybody's different with their grief and how they let go of things. And so there is no timetable per se, but I can tell you this, the sooner we let go, the sooner we can get through that transition more successfully. So that is important.
Don't you see a little bit of a letting go on athletes that have done everything that they possibly could? They've gotten all the rings and the championships, and they're past their prime, but they just can't let it go. Even though nothing was taken away from them, they just can't leave that godhood status, even though they'll always kind of have it. They just have to keep going till they break something or they humiliate themselves and the younger people take over. But they're going to ride that thing as long as, until it's kind of embarrassing.
Well, you know, in one sense, why wouldn't you? If I go and if I were to tell you, Ken, boy, when you leave this, you're going to take a 95% pay cut. Right. I mean, you're going to want to leave that from a financial standpoint. Are you going to want to leave it from, hey, you're going to get free suits, free cars, free meals. And then when you get out, you're not. Right. And you're going to go from inside the locker room to outside the locker room. You're going to go from getting all the support in the world that you needed to now you got to find your own support. I mean, I could go on as well. And so those are the things that make it difficult to let go. Right. That's the reality of it. And so, but it's not just pro athletes. Right? I found with companies as well, working with certain companies, that there's certain practices and policies. Now, you know, you mentioned at the beginning that sometimes change happens and you don't plan on it, right? I mean, that can be very difficult because it's like, whoa, we didn't plan on this change. And one of the most difficult aspects of that is what I had mentioned earlier. We're very comfortable, we're very familiar, then all of a sudden, oh my goodness. Now, there's some companies that change software that causes discomfort because it's like, oh man, we're going through the software change. There's other companies that if they don't change, they're closing their doors, right? And so it's more serious. And it's like, oh my goodness, if we don't change, we are literally closing our doors next week. And so, you know, that change is going to happen. It's just a matter of, do we want to change on purpose for a purpose? Or do we want to let change us, so to speak? And that's one of my approaches. And it's kind of the tagline, change on purpose for a purpose. And by doing that, you prevent that, you know, as much as possible, unexpected change that you are forced to do as a result.
All right. What's E?
E stands for execute your plan. What that means is that during the refocus stage, it's kind of the, you know, the strategic planning, you know, objectives, goals. And one of the things I've learned about change is it's rarely, rarely one and done. In other words, boy, I have my refocus. I'm using my network. I'm letting go. Oh my goodness. We got through it very successfully. It's rarely that way. And I like using the imagery of a water pump, right? The old water pump with the handle where you have to pump it and sometimes you have to prime it, then you have to pump it again. Those old-fashioned water pumps that had a handle, you know, sometimes every once in a while you'll pump it once to get water, but very rarely you have to pump it. Sometimes you have to prime it again, right? And it's that way with the process of change. Sometimes we plan something, we have a refocus, we start tapping into our network, we let go of things, and it's like, ooh, this isn't working. And that's why I like using the PDCA process during this stage of change. You plan, you do, you check and adjust. And this is where most people fail. They plan something, they plan this change, they do it, they check the results, and it's like, oh, it didn't work. Well, then you have to adjust and do it all over again, right? And this is where the execution is very important. Great example of that is there's a friend of mine by the name of Dave Bing. Dave Bing was a high school All-American basketball player out of Washington, D.C. He went on to be an All-American player at Syracuse University. He went on to be a number one draft pick of the Detroit Pistons. Went on to become an NBA Hall of Famer, considered one of the best NBA players in history. Went on to build a $400 million a year business. And then he went on to become Mayor of Detroit. And Dave Bing, throughout his whole time, could have easily, all those changes that he did, could have easily rested on his laurels. Like, oh, okay, you know, I'm a Hall of Famer. I created a big business. Oh, I've been mayor. You know, he continues to give back, and he continues to execute his change and plan throughout his life, which is great. I mean, it's just one of many examples. And so executing your plan is very important, understanding that that's where the grit comes in. That's where the continuing the process of change needs to come in as well.
Hey, Kurt, you mentioned Dave being the mayor of Detroit or former mayor of Detroit. What was Lynn Swann? Was he like the mayor of Pittsburgh?
You know, I think he was it the city mayor?
Yeah,
it was something like that. You're right. I'd have to look it up to see what it was.
But so
Lynn a lot of these Swann, guys, yeah, a lot of these guys, because of their name recognition, right? They're like, oh, wow. Who was the other one? There was another one that was like the mayor.
When I was growing up, you know, I was in the 70s. So I love the Pittsburgh Steelers, four-time Super Bowl, whatever, Terry Bradshaw, Lynn Swann. So Lynn Swann.
Rocky Blyer. Rocky Blyer.
Lynn Swann is my all-time favorite athlete.
Why? Why is that?
I loved wide receivers. I loved the Pittsburgh Steelers. And of course, when you're a kid, you're like, whoever's winning, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You like. And the Steelers, they ruled the 70s. And so I love the Steelers. And, but I particularly like Lynn Swann. He could catch anything. And I remember watching some kind of special on him back then. How was he doing it? And he was like, he took professional ballet lessons where he could run and leap and he'd stretch all those muscles for ballet practice. And then they would show side by side him doing ballet, which seemed weird. But then they'd show him in play or at a Super Bowl doing the same leap over the Rams' heads and catching. So Terry Bradshaw is like one of the best quarterbacks in history, but partly because he could just throw above people's heads and Lynn Swann could get it.
He had players.
But I mentioned that because being a hero of mine, I actually was able to reach out and get a hold of him and invite him on the podcast. And he said no. He said he doesn't do podcasts, but I was so excited just to get an email.
Well, we'll try to get Rocky Blyer on for you. You'll get one of the Steelers at least. That'd be great.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Hey, so funny story, being here in Detroit, Billy Sims, who most people remember, Billy Sims during his Detroit Lions days, Heisman Trophy winner. Short story on Billy Sims. Billy Sims grew up in St. Louis, Missouri initially, and he was not into football whatsoever. Growing up in St. Louis, he was into baseball, but also into gymnastics. He was into gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until his eighth grade year that he moved down to Texas to live with his grandmother that they're like, hey, you're a phenomenal athlete. You need to play football in Texas.
Wow.
But the reason why I bring that up is if you look at a lot of his footage, you'll see a lot of his gymnastic abilities come out during the football games.
Right.
Whether it be leaping, turning his body, you know, he had a lot of body control you could see. And so same thing as Lynn Swann, you know, from the ballet. I think Billy Sims benefited a lot from his gymnastic days.
Yeah, so those cross training things or whatever. One, some of those really play well into other sports. So you have refocus, use network, letting go, execution.
Execute your plan. And the last one stands for someone. What I've discovered is that athletes and individuals and organizations had a mentor, so to speak, one person in particular that helped them to get where they were. In other words, a good friend of mine by the name of Greg Kelser. Greg played in the NBA for 8 years. That was after winning the championship with Michigan State with Magic Johnson against Larry Bird. You talk about the 70s. There's a pinnacle of that era in basketball in 1979 when they won that against Larry Bird. Anyway, Greg was, when he was playing basketball, was really enamored by TV. He was always enamored. And he had somebody here locally at one of the local stations in Detroit that he used to hang out with. That he would just say, hey, when I'm in town, can I just come down to the studio and just watch what you're doing and learn from you? So he did that for many years. And now as a result, Greg has been, I just talked to him a couple weeks ago, 38th year of TV broadcasting for the Detroit Pistons. And so he learned, he had a mentor early on that helped him do that as a result. And I could give examples of corporate as well. I mean, we talk of the Ford Motor Company, talking about when they were going through their downturn in 2008, when the whole country was going through the downturn in 2008, how did they survive? Well, they tapped into the leadership of somebody that was used to be at Ford and then went on to lead Chrysler during a very difficult time in the 80s by the name of Lee Iacocca. And they had Lee Iacocca as a mentor to say, yeah, you know, you went through this before. How did you do this? What were some of the things you did? And so everybody can find a mentor, you know, one person in particular based on their refocus. In other words, boy, this is where I want to be. You know, this person's been there, and it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody older, right? It could be somebody that just, you know, is wiser or has information that maybe you want to gather from that person. And again, creating a win-win relationship with that mentor. But that's what the S stands for. So R stands for refocus. U stands for using your network. L for letting go. E, execute your plan. And S stands for someone or having a mentor.
Yeah, I love that. So I was just thinking, I wrote those down. So those are good business principles, personal principles, any kind of change. Let me ask you this. When it, people of faith, it seems like when change happens, it's handled in different ways. There's 101 sermons for people's disappointments or whatever. And it has to do with providence or God's plans, or he's doing this or he's doing that. And, I was thinking, like, in a Christian worldview, on a personal mm-hmm. level, mm-hmm. when something happens in life that's disappointing, maybe even heartbreaking or confusing, I don't know if like job loss is heartbreaking, but it's something.
Yeah, it could be a loss of a child, loss of a spouse. I mean, it could be very serious, right? And so, yeah, to me, it all boils down to this, Ken, is that I do believe, and you know, here's how I boil it down. We either have to believe the Bible is true or it's not, right? I mean, it's that simple. And you either believe the Bible's true or you don't believe it's true. And if you believe it's true, there's many promises in there. And one of the promises down the line of what you're talking about is God promises that all things work out for our good. In other words, it might be a horrific situation that we're dealing with, but for some reason, that's going to work out for our good. I mean, it's hard to say that when you think about a child, you know, suddenly passing, or a spouse after 50, 60 years passing, or, you know, it's like, boy, how do I find the good in this? But that promise is in there. And I've seen that in my own life, right? Where it's like, wow, why did this happen? Oh, okay, well, it did turn out better. Unfortunately, we don't always see that. And especially, you know, I can personally tell you that often I want to take control of my life. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this, because that's kind of the athlete in me, right? You always just set your goals, you go after them. And I found out that my shoulder was getting very sore from trying to pound down doors that I shouldn't be pounding on. And as a result, I've learned to trust. You know, that's what it boils down to, is that promise is there, that we have to trust that all things work out for the good. And so it may not feel like it, may not seem like it, but I know that things work in mysterious ways through God. And it's a big belief of mine that, you know, I have to trust. And one of my daily prayers, Ken, is that God opens the doors that he wants me to walk through. In other words, I can have plenty of doors that I'm pointing at or trying to open, but I pray that God opens the doors that he wants me to walk through. And when that happens, sometimes I get surprised, like, wow, how did this happen? But then I realize, oh, okay, well, this is what I've been praying for. God, open the doors.
Yeah. These five steps, what comes to mind for me is in the faith aspect too, is praying in faith isn't always just praying and waiting. Mm-hmm. Even in scripture, there was taking action. So to me, these can be combined. You pray, but you can also do something. You know, Jesus would heal lepers, but sometimes not right away. He would say, go cleanse in the temple. He'd give them something to do. And as they went, you know, they would be cleansed. And this is, to me, is like, you have a hurt, there's change. Some things take time to fall into place. You can trust, like you're saying, at the end, all things work together. But these are practical steps that don't step on faith, but I think and work together along with faith. Putting faith in action. I mean, you've got to move.
Yeah, it's funny, because one of the verses, I do daily devotions, one of the verses I read just recently, as a matter of fact, it's ironic, was talking about David in his Psalms, talking about, though we walk through the valley of death and darkness, right? And one of the keys to that verse is that we don't stand. We don't stand in the valley. We don't stand in the darkness. We walk through it. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. We keep mm-hmm. moving as a result. And it's an important part, right? We might not exactly know what that next step is, especially if you're grieving somebody, grieving a loss. Sometimes people don't want to get out of bed, right? But it's like, no, we have to keep walking through that, whatever that might look like. And so that's a great point you just brought up as well.
Yeah, that's a perfect verse, because Yeah. Not praying and just expecting standing there for the darkness to go away, but just keep moving.
Or the manna to show up, right? Okay, God, just send the manna. No, keep walking, keep working, keep, you know, doing whatever you need to do in order to make that happen.
And that's so, right. Even then they had to go collect the manna. It didn't just fall in their mouth.
Good point. Yeah. And chew it, right?
That's right. Hey, I appreciate your time. And if people want to, or companies, or even large churches, organizations, right? Anybody going through change, they're available to contact you through the website.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, being a man of faith, I love sharing my faith. I love to go deeper into it. But I also understand with certain organizations that it's not something to necessarily be out in the front. But everything has the principles. I can tell you that right off the bat. All my principles have to do with my faith and my foundation. But if you want to find out more, you can go to KurtDavid.com, KurtDavid.com. That's the simplest place. Obviously, I'm on LinkedIn as well. So I do a lot of my navigating communication on LinkedIn. Kurt A. David, and look forward to connecting with anybody and seeing how I can help serve people. I mean, my purpose on this earth, Ken, is twofold. It's pretty simple, right? To serve God and to serve others using the gifts and abilities that I've provided. And so, you know, if it fits in with those two objectives, serving God or serving others, I'm all about it. You know, that's what I enjoy to do, because that's what wakes me up. That's what allows me to leave my family and help in those capacities.
And on a final note, let's let people know why you do not drink coffee.
Because it stunts my growth.
Counted among the outlaws, he said, come follow me. People from all walks of life since have been becoming outlaws.